Beck, how are you?
I'm okay, how are you?
Good. Welcome everyone to Medical Mum's chat about what we're watching.
I'm coming to you from Yawuru lands, and I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land of which I am on at the moment.
And I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of our land. I'm coming to you from Melbourne, or the traditional owners are the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation.
So, unfortunately, here we are with more than, you know, the majority of the Australian population stuck at home. So what better to
That's
do
right.
than talk about stuff on TV, I reckon?
What we're watching, exactly.
I'm going to do a little bit of a shout out to the people in the arts industries, if that's okay with you. So I've got a little theme for most of the things I'm talking about today, and that's one of a TV writer. And it got me thinking that they're the unsung heroes, really. And I chased down a Winston Churchill quote about the arts where, you know, apparently he was, this is fake, is what I found out. But for a long time, people have thought that they told him in World War II or World War I or one of the wars to cut the funding to arts. And he said, then what would we be fighting for? So I got a lower brow quote because that one was fake. And that is, the earth without art is just eh.
Eh.
Anon. That's the long-winded way of saying thank goodness for people who write and create for us to consume in times like this.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I have been quite impressed actually that the creating has continued. They found a way around it. And actually one of the shows I want to talk about today, they came across some COVID challenges and had to make some compromises so they could still tell their story. Yeah, but thank goodness they are still creating to keep us entertained.
Yes, exactly. So what did you want to kick off with today?
Well, I think we both had something that we wanted to talk about, and I thought that you might lead the discussion on this one because I felt like you really enjoyed it, and that was The Chair on Netflix.
Ah, The Chair, yes. I watch so many things that I forget. So The Chair on Netflix, I think is reasonably widely watched.
Yes.
And the basis of the story. So it's the lead actor,
Sandra Oh,
who is who becomes the chair of her English department at the university, which is already floundering a little bit, and she gets the top job.
Yeah.
Which is great. And, you know, a celebration of a female and also a
person of colour.
In that role. But she runs across some problems, it's fair to say, in this role of a head of a floundering department. And I think that it was just quite lovely to watch, but I have seen there's a lot of criticisms of it. Are you going to share some of your
really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I felt like there was a lot of hype around this show, and I think there was hype because it was Sandra Oh, so people like Sandra Oh. She's got a real following. We know her from Grey's Anatomy. We know her from Killing Eve. I didn't like her in the former, but I loved her in the latter. And then I think because, you know, she is this female head of department and she is, you know, she plays a Korean, well, she's an American, you know, with Korean heritage, there was a lot of hype around the show. So I watched it with, you know, quite high expectations. And I have to say I liked it and I could appreciate it and I saw the importance of the topics being presented, but I actually found it a bit slow. And I was like, what am I missing? And it wasn't until the fifth episode where David Duchovny comes in and is hilariously self-deprecating and makes an ass of himself. That's when I went, oh, this is funny, this is clever. And the last two episodes for me really brought it home. But what's the criticism? Do tell.
Oh, well, so I think from my point of view, I have had an academic job for the past 9 years. So I think probably a little bit like how Scrubs was so popular amongst medical people, there was a lot of realness. Even though American academics would be different to Australian academics, there's a lot of relatable content. And, you know, things do move slowly in academics, so it probably is a slow-moving, you know, feast. But the criticisms are that there's still mediocre male driving the plot line.
Right.
Which I didn't.
Is that Bill?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just think more power to the lead, you know, like we can't delete mediocre males from the world.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I wasn't offended by that.
Accurate representation. You're like, there's always at least one, isn't there?
I think the David Duchovny stuff was just genius. And
that was hilarious. Yeah.
And I think it really did touch on really relevant topical things like cancel culture and watching. Yes. So one of the lecturers gets tweeted as being anti-Semitic? No, what's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, does the Hitler salute. Yes, yes.
And it's taken out of context and the students turn on him and he tries to defend himself. And I think that's really interesting to watch the quagmire of being cancelled, do you know?
Yeah.
And the impossibility.
Well, especially too because the individual being cancelled and his peers sort of didn't really understand. That was the thing that I got.
Yeah.
They didn't really understand how the young people were going to react and how it just got away from them. I was sort of like, oh, I feel that.
It's very complicated. Cancel culture is very complicated. It's not just person does bad thing, society tells person they're bad. Do you know?
Yeah.
That's just the top of the iceberg.
Everyone around them can get cancelled then.
So I found that interesting. That story.
The other thing that I found interesting too was sort of almost the representation of age, of aging and of ageism, because there was these group of very aged professors and how they were portrayed. And Holland Taylor, who plays Joan Hambling, I thought she was fabulous. And I'm not sure whether she hammed up the... her age, because I remember her from, you know, Legally Blonde and a number of other things where she's very strong woman, whereas in this she looks old and frail.
But that's the other thing is there's a whole bunch of older actors in this, you know, really important roles in this show. So I'm all for all of that,
yeah.
You know, because that's we need to reverse this situation where old people disappear off our screens.
Yes.
So I'm sure, like, how many stars would you give it? I'd probably give it 4.
Yeah, I was going to say 3.5. And yeah. I think, you know, they're half-hour episodes, they're 6 episodes. It's an easy watch. And, yeah, wait for David Duchovny and you'll be hooked.
Yeah, absolutely. It's worth it for that. It's only 3 hours and you get this, like, little bit of gold in the middle. And you might.
What did you have on your list then, Beck?
So I was going to kick off with A Million Little Things.
Okay.
It's a Stan series with an ensemble cast. It's a drama. And I nearly talked about it last week, having not watched the third series. And I'm so glad I didn't last week. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. The other last week.
That last least, chat.
Yeah. So I won't say too much about the storyline, but I think... this has had a very big impact on me watching the third series. And so the reason is it's an ensemble cast. The story revolves around 4 men who are mates. They met in an elevator that got, stuck. And become lifelong friends. And the opening scene, one of them is about to take their life. So it's quite dramatic from the get-go. And I was thinking in the first 2 seasons... Because I do think about the potential criticisms of shows when I'm watching them, that the drama of it might be a criticism. But I like drama, and the harder my life is, the more crazy the drama. Like, I watched Home and Away in third year medical school and got, like, a lot of shtick for doing that. But I was like, let me just escape into this crazy dramatic summer bay for a little while, you know? So they all have their kind of storylines, and that we've got a budding filmmaker who's married to a restaurant owner. She's already had one restaurant go broke and opens another one. We've got Delilah, who is has come from a place of great comfort and wealth, and it's her husband that loses his life in the first episode. So she's now a widow with 2 teenage children. We have Gary, who's a single fella, who's a survivor of breast cancer and meets his girlfriend in a breast cancer survivors group, and he's a little bit of a lad. And we have Eddie, who's a washed up rock star, who's married to Catherine, a lawyer, who used to be the life of the party, but now she's like supporting the family and become a bit of a stick in the mud. And there's stories of infidelity and illness and all the things you would see in a drama, but it's with a very modern kind of lens. And then the reason that I'm glad I didn't talk about it last time is that it's all very dramatised in series one and two. I love it. It's not everyone's cup of tea, but I think it's worth watching. And they talk about mental health and they talk about things that wouldn't have been talked about in Days of Our Lives. And I really think that's good. And mm-hmm. breast cancer, you know, there's just a lot of very kind of good, solid storylines that I support in dramatised, you know, go nuts. But in the third series, it's post-COVID. And these people's livelihoods have been completely swiped away by COVID.
Right, yeah.
And they film it in a post-COVID world and the drama has gone and it is a stripped bare reality. Like, they show the budding filmmaker's film about to be cast or has been cast and they're about to do the read-through when they get locked down. And the rawness of them filming this from an industry that they themselves went through this is so moving. And
right.
Rome and Regina, the movie maker and the restaurant owner, are people of colour. And they foster a child during this because everything's difficult in their neighbourhood in COVID. And their parent, one of their parents is over and he's looking at his phone like teenagers do. And they say, "What's wrong?" And he says, "Oh my goodness, this is what happened when I tried to tell this to my friend." He says, "You just need to watch this." And he shows them George Floyd video.
Oh, right.
And it's not drama anymore. Do you know? I mean, it is. Yeah. It's people acting, but it's people who really
a real event.
That. And then they talk about going to the protest and they all talk about how they've never protested before and so many people go to their first ever protest and they talk about the reasons why. And all along there's COVID and there's, you know, like just – and the restaurant closes. And I don't think in a drama they would have let that happen because it was the heartbeat of this story and everyone gathers there and it's – but I think they – restaurants – closed, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just think it's a really stunning kind of
portrayal.
Yeah, current. And also it just changes. But you already love these characters if you're like me and you've coped with the drama to then. And it's just, you know, the things they deal with, they deal with sexual assault as well. So I think any way of shining a light on difficult issues and getting it out to the masses is good. And I think it's very well worth a watch, and I'd give this one 5 stars.
Okay, all right. Well, that sounds interesting. It has been interesting, actually, because there are some series where COVID has been included, like Superstore, you know, where they're all in the budget retail store and they're all going around in masks and there's social distancing and then they go out into their tea room, they take their masks off, or Brooklyn Nine-Nine, they've included it. Mm-hmm. But there must be – I don't watch Neighbours or Home and Away anymore, but do they include does COVID still exist in Summer Bay? Or?
I think that creators have made a decision to either include it or try very hard to ignore it.
Yeah.
And I think there's an appetite for both of those things, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah, totally. Well, I do appreciate it when I see characters in masks.
Mm.
But then at the same time, it's really nice to escape it where you can, isn't it? Mm. All right, so that's on Stan.
Yes.
And there's 3 seasons. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I have to check that one out. Well, the next one I wanted to talk about, I'm going to take us to the ABC, is The Newsreader. And, yeah, good. I'm getting the
that's
thumbs up.
That's on my list as well,
yeah.
Yes. That's a great segue into my little, you know, ode to the TV writer. So tell us your take on The Newsreader.
Well, The Newsreader is created and written by Michael Lucas of Offspring fame, directed by Emma Freeman and produced by Joanna Werner and filmed in Melbourne. And Joanna Werner, I went to through, we went to ballet school together. So I have a very distant connection to this. And it's the story of the 1980s newsroom. So it stars Alan Torv as Helen Norville, who's the clever, ambitious female news anchor. There's Sam Reed, who plays Dale Jennings, the enthusiastic rookie reporter. William McInnes plays there.
It took me half an hour to realise it was him.
Who it was, yeah.
I was like, I know this person. How do I know them? He's just transformed.
So he's their bullying sexist news director, Lindsay. And then there's also Jeff, who is, I forget his name, Robert somebody, and he is the veteran male anchor. And so Jeff and Helen are at the desk, and they're part of a fast-paced newsroom set in the 1980s. So I love the aesthetic of this series.
The 80s, they've just done such a wonderful job of the 80s setting.
Recreating it, yeah.
And, you know, as sad as I am that this is in my lifetime and I remember watching Halley's Comet, you know, I remember getting out of bed to watch Halley's Comet and to see it portrayed as, like, olden days kind of hurts, but mostly it's just wonderful to see the cars of my childhood and the phones.
Totally. I love the beige too. I love how everything is just like different shades of beige. So there's the hair, the earrings, the shoulder pads, the beige.
and the dial phones, the round ones, and the video cassettes
when the machine eats the tape, you're like, oh my gosh, I remember that happening.
And the change that's happened in our lifetime, it's really astounding. Like the way they used to get all the old newspaper clippings out and chop together old video.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think even though we've lived it, we've got a full understanding of just how much our life has changed.
And the way they were running the video from one end of the building to the other so that they could put it into the machine to broadcast it. Yeah. It's hilarious. So I think they've – and that even the – it's, I don't know if it's my TV, but it even seems to be grainy.
Yes. Yeah.
The way they've shot it.
It feels like it's been shot on video, 100%. I think it's wonderful. And I am also – I'm here for Michael Lucas. Like, I am a fan. I have been a fan for a good while. He was the person that I wanted to, you know, pay tribute today with some of my recommendations. So I'm so glad you brought Newsreader to the table. I think it's dropping one episode a week on iView, and I'm not sure where the Kiwis can watch it, but I'm sure it'll make its way there because although it's very Australian content, New Zealand TV news.
So far we've seen they covered Halley's Comet, they've covered the Challenger disaster, they've covered Lindy Chamberlain's release. Mm. Yeah. And there's a few more big moments coming up. And I think it'll be interesting to see where this relationship between Dale and Helen goes. So Helen is they formed this duo at work, haven't they? They've formed a formidable team.
Is it a fomance, which is, you know, a modern day term of all these couples that get together just in time for their movie release, you know?
Yeah, right. So I'm not sure Helen's aware that it's a fomance, is it? But I think,
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, highly recommended. Dropping one time a week. So another Michael Lucas recommendation then, which is on, I didn't get Binge because Binge got pipped at the post by Paramount Plus. So I've been sucked into some of the advertising, and apparently it's got the biggest streamers from the US. So while it's still building its content in Australia, I think it will become quite a large streaming service because it's got all the recognisable names from the US that I can't remember any of them, but like Nickelodeon and
HBO, that kind of stuff.
So Five Bedrooms is another creation of Michael Lucas.
Oh, yes.
The first series was available on free-to-air TV, and they've dropped the second series on the opening day of Paramount Plus in Australia. So they're one of the early adopters of Paramount Plus. The first series is available there as well. The premise of the story is it's been a long time since I watched the first series, but they're at a wedding and there's a singles table, as there sometimes is at weddings, especially in drama.
I've been on that.
And there's five of them at various stages of their life who are really struggling to get into the housing market. One of them's a real estate agent, and she says, you know what, you know, we should just go and buy a house together. Ha ha ha. And they do, and they buy a five-bedroom house together. And so you've got Ainsley, who's the real estate agent, young girl, you know, in an unfortunate situation with a married man. You have Ben, I think it is, who where's the cast? I didn't write. Yes, Ben, who's like a tradie, he's got a bit of a dark past, but he's a lovely kind of Aussie chap. Heather, who's an older woman with teenage kids, who's moved out of left home. and you've got Kat Stewart as Liz, who's whose husband gambled away all their money, and she's a lawyer, but she gets some work at Heather's aged care home as a receptionist because she's hit hard times. Is that five? Oh no, and we've got Roy Joseph as Harry Sethi, who's a doctor. How could I forget Harry? He's Liz's best friend, and he's a surgeon, a very eligible, a single man who his traditional Indian mum keeps trying to set him up with different women, and he's madly trying to figure out how he's going to tell her and his family that he's gay. So we get to watch him go through that story, and he's one of my favourite characters. I think it's one of those ensemble casts that it's just really hard to talk about the storyline because they each have their own episodes. There's some very kind of moving, heartbreaking stories in season two, but I would highly recommend it. And I think
so. It's kind of like a share house. It's a bit like Secret Life. Is it Australian?
I'm pretty sure it's set in Melbourne. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's Michael Lucas. So if you like Offspring, if you like Newsreader,
you like Michael Lucas. Yep. All right.
And it's his, both of these are his, he's the lead person. So Newsreader and Five Bedrooms. So he was one of the writers on Offspring, and he was also one of the writers on Tangled, which I completely missed.
That's funny because we just started watching Tangled and I nearly mentioned it, but I haven't watched enough episodes to, formulate my opinion yet. But I was like, oh, I've never heard of this. Yeah, I better watch this.
And he also is a regular podcaster on Emsolation.
Well, that was, I have listened to Michael and Em discuss the Newsreader. And I did, because you put me onto that podcast, Beck. Yeah. Thank you for that recommendation. And I do enjoy listening to him speak. So, it's very entertaining.
Like, I feel like he's, you know, my kind of person.
Yeah.
So.
Someone you'd be friends with.
Thanks, Michael, for keeping me entertained.
Well, the next thing on my list, I know that sometimes I've touched on it, but I haven't actually ever spoken about it, is the thing that I just really love is a bit of reality TV. And I think it's because it's the drama. And I listened to a podcast on it this week, which hilariously the podcast was Melissa Rivers, who is Joan Rivers' daughter, and she was interviewing the producer of Below Deck Med. So I thought I would just... chat to you about Below Deck Med. Have you watched any of the Below Decks, Beck?
No.
So Below Deck is a reality TV series where they have a camera crew that goes and lives on a super yacht. And Below Deck Med is set in the Mediterranean, and the captain is Captain Sandy. So we've got a kick-ass female crew. So Captain Sandy's the captain. We've got Malia, who's the bosun. She's the head of the deck crew. And then we have the chief stew, who is the head of interior. And basically it's a super yacht, and they have extremely wealthy people who come on board and spend, you know, three nights, four nights being waited on hand and foot. And we watch the crew run around and look after them. And then in between they go out and they party hard. And I guess the reason that I love this particular franchise is it's not scripted. So when I was listening to the podcast, the producer was saying, what you see is just what we get. If we miss storylines, we miss storylines. We actually don't, you know, like your Real Housewives, they script things or they plant people or spread rumours. But Below Deck, the drama is all real. The other reason I love it is that these people are all living in very small quarters. And so it's people from all different walks of life, and they all have to learn to get along with each other. There are moments of really bad, you see some really bad behaviour, often alcohol or often just guests who have too much money behaving badly. But you also see some really lovely behaviour, you know, about people supporting each other in the workplace, supporting each other through dramas and, yeah, just life challenges that might come their way. So yeah, Below Deck Med, streaming on Binge, and also Hey You, which is a reality TV platform for all your reality TV.
So I followed one of your recommendations, and I watched both series of This Way Up, and then which is lovely, and I would wholeheartedly support that recommendation. And then Stan suggested to me, on the basis of watching that, that I watch something called Back to Life, which is a bit of a find. And I was wondering how to explain it, like what kind of category to put it in. I just tried to tell it to my friend who dropped me off to get my car fixed. And I said, I told her the storyline and then said, but it is a little bit funny. And she's like, oh, yeah, it sounds
funny. Is this
the
one about a lady who's just got out of jail for murder?
That's
or prison
it.
For murder.
So
yes,
it's a dark comedy, the word web tells me. You've started it? So, yes, it's a lady, Daisy Haggard, who was in Breeders, which I didn't watch, but I think was reasonably popular.
I didn't watch Breeders. Yeah.
Who went to prison for murdering her friend in her teenage years.
Yes.
She doesn't fully understand what happened in the situation that led to her friend dying, and she gets released to the care of her aging parents in a small town, and takes with her the kind of murderess label, and finds herself in all sorts of awkward situations in a very unwelcoming town, and also, you know, needs to get to the bottom of what actually happened the night her friend died. So there's a little bit of whodunit, or not whodunit, she killed a friend, but how did it happen?
Why did she do it? Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of small town kind of, you know, craziness, which I really identify with because my town is not that large. And and there is moments of comedy gold. So her next door neighbour is a lovely fella that's out in his garden a lot because he is married to a woman who has got advanced dementia from some cause that we'd never find out, and she tries to get a job, and she can only get a job in a fish and chip shop. So we meet the fish and chip shop owner, and people are, you know, graffitiing her front yard, and it all sounds very grim, but somehow it also manages a lovely kind of comedic element as well. So I really liked it, and it's only 4 episodes, so it's a pretty easy watch.
Is it only? I was hoping that there's going to be another series though, because we need to know, because they ended it with that town meeting, didn't they?
Yes.
And so for people listening, we get the sense that there's more to the story. There's more information to be revealed as to why she committed this crime. So
yeah,
we need series 2.
Yes, I think it's left itself really open to series 2. The only criticism I have. You know, watching all these things about people who are around about my age is really interesting, and I'm really appreciating it. But she's meant to be 36, and I just couldn't watch without going, I'm not sure they've cast for a 36-year-old here. So I wikied her, and she's 43. Yeah.
Well, I was about to say, to me, I would think she's my age. I'm 43.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's no surprise. I think everybody's my age.
And I just think because they're very definite about timelines, and she's been in jail for 18 years. Like it's not a an age range. It's like a specific. They're very specific with numbers. And so maybe they should have just made the maths work so that she wasn't trying to be 36. Because it's the only thing that kind of jolts me out of getting sucked in is that she just doesn't seem 36. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. It doesn't. I mean, it shouldn't. It doesn't. I don't think it's ageism. I think it's just.
No, I know what you mean. You are in a slightly different headspace, 36 to 43, for sure.
And you know, she's
and if you'd come out of jail at 36, I think
you've still
I would have had a different
fertile window. You
totally,
know, lots of things would be different. And so you can't watch this lady and really get a connect to her as a 36-year-old because she's clearly, you know, she has my kind of skin. You know, the sun is not kind to us. Pale folk. He smiled too much.
Yeah, but it's a nice little watch, isn't it? Again,
yeah, definitely.
Easy, accessible, something different, but something, kind of like, could.
Yeah.
Good. Excellent. All right. Wow, we've been busy, haven't we?
Yeah, I've just got one more thread to pick up. So that is that Michael Lucas, I don't know if it's his, it's him, but he often works with similar actors. So there's a few actors that kind of cross over all his projects. And one of them is Stephen Peacock, who's everywhere at the moment. He's Ben in Five Bedrooms. He's a newsman on Newsreader. And he's
the sports guy. Yep.
He's a very ochre Aussie in all of his roles. I feel like he probably is in real life as well, but I could be wrong. He's one of the lead characters in the new RFDS show on Channel 7, Free to Air.
Oh, right. Okay.
So he's a flight nurse, and I just wanted to give RFDS a call out. There's only 3 episodes so far. It's Free to Air on Channel 7. A medical mum was one of the medical advisors, and another rural generalist advised them. And I think the tension between reality and drama is managed quite well, and the medical situations are dramatic, no doubt, but to stay true to actual reality in the drama. Possible. So, you know.
Well, and interesting on the Newsreader last night, the doctor who was prescribing the, Valium or whatever he was prescribing was one of the original flying doctors.
Ah.
Did you?
From Cooper's Crossing.
Him? Yeah.
No, I didn't. Good spotting, Beck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you won't be throwing things at the TV from a medical point of view with RFDS.
Okay.
And it's a nice
I thought that was going to be one of your criticisms of the chair, was that as an academic, you know, when you watch things that are what you do in real life, you get really frustrated and you're like, no, that's not how it would actually be. But okay. Not a criticism of the chair and not a criticism of our RFDS.
No, congratulations to everyone involved in RFDS, and beautiful cinematography as well. And again, we're seeing a lot of hard-hitting storylines that we wouldn't have seen on TV 20 years ago.
Okay. So, and is there COVID in RFDS?
No, not yet.
Okay. All right.
Filmed during COVID times, but they've ignored
a COVID-free zone.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. All right.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground today.
We have. Lovely chatting to you.
Yes, you too. I'm glad you found a little space in your very full locked down house to talk to me.
Well, I kicked everyone out, so I was just like, I just need the desk. I need you all to go away. Anyway, I'll go and rejoin them.
And all we would really like people to tell us their recommendations or what they think, or if they disagree. I'd invite hearty disagreement too with anything we've said. Would you?
Totally. Oh my gosh.
Love a bit of a talk.
Awesome redirection. I know that I'm very guilty of going down a rabbit hole and, you know, staying there. So yeah, very happy to be redirected.
Tell us what you like. We might even watch something if you tell us we should. Because, you know, we'd twist our rubber arms.
Our busy lives.
I'm going to get my subscriptions. What's the word when you downsize and sort?
Reconciled?
Yeah, I'm going to sort them out because I...
Rationalise. Rationalise. That's what they do, the drug tout,
isn't it? I'm going to rationalise my subscriptions one of these days. So while I've got too many, tell me what to watch.
don't do it.
All right, I'll see you next time, Beck.
Okay, bye, Beck.